The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Katra AI.
Welcome back to the deep dive. Today we're taking on a subject that's genuinely challenging, a history that I think many people would probably prefer to keep blocked away.
We are. We're diving into the global history of eugenics, and we're using the essential work of historian Philippa Levine as our guide.
Right. And when you hear that word eugenics, I think for most of us, the immediate reaction is to think of Nazi Germany.
Mm-hmm. You place it there as this, you know, singular, horrific event that's somehow outside the norm.
Exactly. But our mission today, really following Levine's research, is to correct that view.
We're going to unpack eugenics not as an aberration, but as a pervasive global movement that shaped modern social policy everywhere.
It's staggering. It impacted how we think about race, class, gender, even disability in countries we consider progressive, like the U.S., Britain, the Scandinavian countries. And this is not just a history lesson. I mean, the relevance today is just undeniable.
Yeah.
Every time you hear a debate about genetic counseling or prenatal screening or gene editing tools like CRISPR, you're hearing echoes of that same eugenic logic.
So we need to understand the origins of that system of control to make, you know, better choices about our future.
Exactly. Before we repeat the past in a new high-tech way.
Okay, so before we get into the really uncomfortable facts, let's talk a bit about the scholar whose work we're leaning on, Philippa Levine.
She's a distinguished historian with professorships at both USC and UT Austin. And her background is just crucial here.
In what way?
Well, her expertise spans British imperial history, gender studies, and the history of medicine. And it's that fusion, that interdisciplinary approach, that makes her perspective so unique.
So it's not just a narrow look at the science.
Not at all. Her knowledge of imperial history lets her trace how these ideas weren't just, you know, passed between London and New York. They were actively spread and tested across these huge colonial networks.
She really moves the focus beyond just Germany and the U.S.
Right. And then there's her feminist lens, which I think is so incredibly insightful.
She shows that this was never some neutral thing happening in a lab.
No, it was deeply invasive. And women's bodies really became the main site of intervention. Her work is just essential for understanding how eugenic policies directly targeted women's reproductive autonomy.
So it's about connecting that mechanism of control to the bigger picture.
Precisely. Yeah. She argues that at the end of the day, eugenics was always about power and control, just dressed up in the language of biology. Yeah. It was a tool for managing society.
Okay, so let's jump into the book's central premise, which is maybe the most difficult part of this. Levine just completely challenges that old idea of eugenics as a fringe movement.
She does. Her core argument is that it was deeply mainstream. It was global. And critically, it was seen as thoroughly modern.
Modern, not backwards.
No, progressive. It was championed by people across the political spectrum. Progressives, social democrats, fascists. Because it was pitched as a rational scientific solution to all the problems of the modern world.
Like industrialization, immigration, class conflict.
All of it. It was sold as this idea that you could use science to engineer a perfect, efficient society and, you know, manage the nation's stock.
And the book traces this journey of an idea from Francis Galton coining the term in 1883 all the way to, well, to how it still persists today.
And she makes a really important distinction. The movement had two sides to it. First, you had what they called positive eugenics,
which was about encouraging the fit to reproduce.
Exactly. It might sound, you know, harmless enough, but this is where you get things like the fitter families contests at American state fairs.
I've seen pictures of those. It's like they're judging people like livestock.
That's precisely the idea.
Yeah.
But the much more dominant and far more brutal side was negative eugenics.
Preventing reproduction among the unfit.
Mm-hmm. And this is where you get the compulsory sterilization laws, the immigration quotas. And Levine's work is so powerful because it shows this happening everywhere. The U.S., Scandinavia, Japan, Brazil, the colonies. It was a global phenomenon.
So let's dig into the specifics a bit. Where did this all start?
It starts with Francis Galton, who was actually Charles Darwin's cousin.
Mm-hmm.
He coined the term eugenics in 1883. It literally means good birth.
But the idea didn't just come out of nowhere, right?
No, it was born this really volatile intersection of a few things. You had Darwinian theory, of course.
Applying animal breeding ideas to people.
Yes. And you had Malthusian fears about overpopulation.
Mm.
And then you had all these new statistical methods to categorize and measure people.
And Levine's key insight here is that the early eugenicists saw themselves as progressive reformers.
They did. They framed it as a scientific humanitarian project to eliminate suffering and improve the human condition. It wasn't sold as something malicious. It was sold as enlightened management.
That altruistic angle is what made it so acceptable.
And the idea just spread like wildfire through international conferences and academic networks. The policies were different in different places, but the core logic was the same.
Okay, so let's take the U.S. as a case study. Here, it was intensely focused on race and immigration, wasn't it?
Very much so. It was about protecting the so-called white American stock from mixing with supposedly inferior groups.
And this wasn't just talk. It led directly to policy.
Absolutely. The Immigration Act of 1924 is a prime example. It explicitly restricted people from Southern and Eastern Europe and Asia based on overtly eugenic arguments.
And the legal validation of this stuff is just terrifying.
The compulsory sterilization programs. I mean, you had the Supreme Court case, Buck v. Bell, in 1927.
That's the one where Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr. said,
"Three generations of imbeciles are enough." And that ruling legally sanctioned the forced sterilization of tens of thousands of Americans. It shows this wasn't happening in the shadows. This was the law of the land.
But Levine really makes the point that the U.S. wasn't an outlier. She talks a lot about Scandinavia.
Yeah, countries like Sweden, which we often think of as these models of progressive welfare states, they also deeply integrated eugenics into their state policy.
How so?
Well, they saw it as a way to create a more efficient, scientifically managed welfare system. Sweden had forced sterilization laws on the books well into the 1970s.
The 70s.
Yes. And the criteria weren't always about clear genetic disabilities. Often it was about being socially inadequate. So poor women, prostitutes, people deemed morally delinquent.
It just reveals how this idea of scientifically engineering society was seen as the ultimate progressive goal.
And that brings us right back to Levine's focus on gender and empire. Women's bodies, she argues, became the site where the state enforced these ideals.
So the policies were coercive. On the one hand, encouraging the fit, you know, educated, white, middle-class women to have more children.
Mm-hmm. Through subsidies or just public price.
And on the other hand, actively controlling or sterilizing the unfit, poor women, women of color, disabled women.
It completely politicized reproduction. It turned it from a personal choice into a tool of state control.
And you see this complexity in figures like Margaret Sanger,
a key leader in the birth control movement, fighting for women's rights. But she absolutely used eugenic arguments to get mainstream support for her cause. She saw it as a way to legitimize birth control.
And then there's the imperial context. She writes about how colonies served as laboratories.
It's such a dark insight. In places like British India or South Africa, policymakers could test out radical eugenic measures, extreme segregation, bans on mixed marriages that would have been too controversial back home.
So they were experimenting on vulnerable populations.
Unchecked experimentation. And all of this history eventually leads us to Nazi Germany.
Right. And Levine's point is that the Nazi regime wasn't an isolated event. It was a radical escalation, the logical extension of this international thinking.
That's it, exactly. The Nazis moved from compulsory sterilization, which they borrowed directly from American models, to the T4 euthanasia programs.
Which was the state-sponsored mass murder of disabled people.
Yes. And it was carried out initially by doctors and nurses, a complete failure of the medical establishment.
And it was that extremity plus the Holocaust that finally discredited the explicit language of eugenics.
But, and this is Levine's crucial point, the underlying logic never went away. It just adapted.
It morphed into new forms like medical genetics, genetic counseling, or population control programs aimed at developing countries. The logic persists.
So what are the big takeaways from all of this? I mean, what does Levine's work force us to rethink?
First, I think, is just to accept that eugenics was transnational and mainstream. It wasn't a few mad scientists. It was an elite consensus.
Right, which means we have to stop just blaming one country and start looking at the eugenic legacies in our own national histories.
The second big theme is that dangerous intersection of science and social control. It gains so much power by cloaking old prejudices about race, class, disability, in the neutral, authoritative language of science.
It gave bigotry a veneer of objective truth. And that leads to the third point, which is the malleability of these scientific categories.
Like feeble-mindedness.
Exactly. These terms were constantly being redefined to serve political goals. They weren't real biological truths. They were policy tools.
Which makes you ask, what categories are we defining today? What counts as normal versus deviant now?
And the final and maybe most chilling takeaway is the persistence of eugenic logic. The dream of perfecting humanity through reproduction never died.
It just mutated, it adapted, it shifted from state coercion into the language of individual choice.
Yeah. And some of the quotes or sort of conceptual statements in Levain's work just really stay with you.
There's one that really sums it all up for me.
Let me guess. Eugenics was never simply about science. It was always about power.
That's the one. It just cuts through all the noise and gets to the heart of it. The goal was social control.
Mm-hmm. And then there's the one that captures the gendered aspect so perfectly. Mm-hmm. Women's bodies became the primary battleground for eugenic interventions, making reproduction a site of state control rather than personal choice.
A direct attack on autonomy.
And maybe the most sobering one of all. The tragedy of eugenics is not that it was practiced by monsters, but that it was advocated by people who genuinely believed they were improving the world.
That's the real danger, the well-intentioned impulse that leads to devastating policy.
So how do we apply this history? I mean, how does this help us with the dilemmas we face right now?
Well, first, it gives us a critical lens for evaluating genetic technologies. When we're looking at prenatal screening or CRISPR, we have to ask some hard questions.
Are these tools reinforcing old assumptions about human worth? Are we screening out disease, or are we maybe unintentionally screening out difference?
That's a crucial distinction, and it also informs the fight for reproductive justice today.
Right. Knowing the history of forced sterilization of marginalized women reminds us that policy has to protect the right to have children and the right not to have them, free from any coercion.
Especially for women of color and disabled women.
And finally, her work is just an essential tool for challenging ableism. It forces us to look at how our society talks about disability and whether we're still using that eugenic language of contribution or worth or being a burden.
You know, what surprised me most in all this was just how accepted eugenics was in progressive movements. Mm-hmm. The idea that it was central to welfare programs in places like Sweden, it really forces you to check your assumptions about which ideologies are safe. It was this failure of faith in science, all wrapped up in the language of doing good.
And that leads to the final thought that Levain really leaves us with. Her work demands that we examine our own assumptions, sometimes the unspoken ones, about human worth. We have to stay vigilant against that seductive logic of scientific management, the idea that science alone can fix our deep social problems. Because historically, the path to perfecting humanity is a very perilous one.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.